Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome into Brewcast from Mesa Brew on the SB Nation Podcast Network. I'm Luke Giardi, joined as always by Anthony Brewman and Chris Castellani, here with you on Monday night, February 22nd, as we head into Tuesday, February 23rd. We have a lot to get to here on the show tonight, and we are streaming live on Twitch, as if you're listening on the podcast, we do every time we record this show, and usually Monday nights at 7:30, unless we tell you otherwise. Sometimes we have to push it a day. It is what it is. But here tonight, we've got obviously going to be a lot of time spent on Michigan, Ohio State. What a game that was on Sunday. We have a little football news as well, including some interesting behavior by a former Michigan Wolverine. We'll get into that. A decision made that, well, not too many people were too fond with. We'll put it that way. But before we get into all that, Anthony, Chris, how are we doing here tonight?
Not too bad. Still kind of riding the high from the Sunday afternoon's events. The further you get away from it, the more it's just like, wow, that was a thing that happened. So, yeah, good times. I mean, anytime we've never – I don't think in the history of this show, we've had a Victory Monday Ohio State edition in any sport. So let's take those.
What a good point, man. Wow. I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah, no, it's good. It feels good. It's good to be here. Good to be with the two of you guys. Me and Chris kind of did the immediate reactions thing yesterday, but here we are, you know, the three amigos here. So let's roll.
This is, you took the words out of my mouth, man. I'm still riding the high as well. And that's the power of sports. And it's something that we haven't had the opportunity to experience very often in the last year plus. But yeah, my favorite team went on the road to Columbus and won a whale of a game. And with each, we've known for a while. I think I would even venture to say that our sight caught on about as early as anybody that, okay, there might be something special brewing here. I mean, Anthony, you called this team the best team in the Big Ten early January. I mean, before Wisconsin, before Minnesota, you know, before they steamrolled those teams, we were one of the first to be like, all right, they're rolling. And they've kept rolling. And they find themselves currently number three in the country. We can talk about that a little bit. I know they lost the game to Minnesota. And, you know, of course, if they would have won that game, who knows where they'd be. But I don't really know what else a team can do to not be number one or number two. You know, it's just the fact that Baylor and Gonzaga are, you know, I won't say head and shoulders because I think Michigan would have a good chance against either one of those teams, but it's an awesome ride that this team is on right now. And yesterday's game, I thought maybe the further I got away from it, my hyperbolicness would change regarding how I felt about it. It hasn't. I think that's what I believe that will go down as one of the best Big Ten games that we've seen in a long time. And it was tense the entire way through, and it wouldn't shock me at all if those teams decide to go up against each other again in Indianapolis in the Final Four.
I mean, I try not to be, you know, like you said, Chris, hyperbolic as much as I can on the show. And I spent a lot of time thinking about this here today. Just, you know, if I wanted to bring it up here on the show, but you know, I've watched a lot.
What it is too. Our hubris at times has gotten us hurt with things that we've said on here.
Yeah, no, this is just more to do with the game itself. Like I was thinking about the magnitude of it. You know, it's number three versus number four. Like if you just break it down college basketball wise, it is number three versus number four. two schools that legitimately hate each other. Like, I know the basketball teams, that rivalry isn't as much as the football one, but it's still two schools and two fan bases that absolutely despise each other. And it's a game, you know, unfortunately, the only thing it was missing was a giant packed crowd in Columbus. But you had two teams that shot over 50% from the field. You had Michigan shoot 11 of 23 from three and Ohio State shoot 11 of 22 from three. I think Michigan had 19 assists and Ohio State had somewhere like 11. The ball movement, the shot making against good defense. Like, I understand Michigan right. scored 90 plus and Ohio State almost scored 90. The defense was there this game, man. And that's what I legitimately think, that this is probably a top five regular season college basketball game ever, given the, you know, the circumstances surrounding two top five teams. That is a 92-87 final against really good defenses, really good shot making. Just, I mean, you could probably go through the history of regular season college basketball and not find too many games that were as good as that one.
I won't go there yet, but if one of these teams or both of these teams makes a deep run in the tournament, I could see us looking back and being like, yeah, it was incredible that those two teams playing at the height of their powers went up against each other and battled the way that those two teams did. And I mentioned this on the Hoops Pod, but it's worth repeating. Yeah, Luke, you said it. You know, there's a lot of points, 92-87. Oh, there would be people on the outside who'd be like, man, defense must have been optional. It was great defense all game. Guys, hands were in faces. Bodies were being thrown around. Guys were falling over, fighting for rebounds. Shots just went in. It was just an offensive clinic from both sides. And somebody, my boss at my day job is an Ohio State graduate. And he said something to me today that was very, very telling. And I agreed with him. That game felt like what the football game should be year in and year out, where you have these two programs, elite programs at the top of their game, playing for something that really, really matters. And you get a really close, contentious game that was three or four possessions or one or two calls away from going the other team's way. It was a whale of a performance. And it's one of the only games I can ever recall in which I can't think of a goat in this game. And by goat, I mean like a villain, somebody who screwed up. Nobody played particularly bad on either side.
The guy who Justin threw an errant pass with like 2 minutes left that led to a layup.
That was dumb. That was dumb. But I don't recall who that was. Mm-mm. But like,
it was a Florida State transfer.
Oh, Walker.
Was off the bench there. What was his?
Right, who didn't play poorly? I mean, it's everyone Walker? All around.
Yeah, he had 15.
Right, exactly. Everyone all around brought their A game. And really, you look at kind of the history of, I mean, any college basketball game, any rivalry game, it usually is the team that makes the fewest mental mistakes that ends up winning the game. And that was a mental mistake on Ohio State's part. The other thing I brought up that just blew my mind, there were 16 turnovers combined in this game.
That's what I mean, man.
I live in
it
Lansing.
It was an incredibly played basketball game.
I know. I live in Lansing. I've seen Michigan State match that in the first half, like on a good day in this year. So like, it shows how fluid and how back and forth and you know, well controlled this game was, that you didn't have a lot of balls being knocked out of people's hands. You didn't have a lot of errant passes. I mean, that was to me like basketball at its finest, just absolute theater watching that game.
I can't disagree with any of that. I mean, if I think of some of the games in any sport of late in the regular season where you're like, wow, that's a moment. Like this is a big deal. Probably the most entertaining one of the most entertaining events I've seen. The yeah. only thing that comes to mind that might top it for me in this, again, we're kind of, we're still riding the high here. So hyperbole is welcome. The one that sticks out to me that is kind of in this same realm is that Monday Night Football game from like a few years ago with the Rams and the Chiefs, where it was like 51-48.
Good comparison.
I mean, both teams, like you said, just absolutely getting after it. It's Michigan slid. They did slide on KenPom defensively from 7th to 12th, but Ohio State slid from like 63rd to like 88th. So someone's slide was a lot worse than the other one. And like we said before, again, I'm a broken record here. We know about the top 10 offense, top 15 defense, what that means for you. Michigan is still kind of comfortably there. And actually, they moved back up to 11th on defense earlier today. So, yeah, I mean, it's, again, a lot of how this game will be remembered probably depends on what comes next and how this year ultimately right. finishes out. But to me, this, if you weren't convinced this is a team doing something special and a team that's on a mission, yesterday was that and more. Like, that's the, say they win the national title and the DVD or the Blu-rays come out of, you know, relive Michigan's run through the national title, whatever that documentary would be, that this will have its own, you know, its own segment there. And it's just, it's remarkable. It'd be remarkable in a vacuum, but it's even more remarkable given what they, again, we're just a week removed from them doing what they did at Wisconsin after being off for 3 weeks. So it's just, what an incredible, incredible time to be a Michigan basketball fan. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. And one more thing I wanted to, you know, real quick, Luke, sorry. There's just one more thing I wanted to bring up that I forgot on the Hoops pod yesterday. And the first half was completely defined by Michigan's, I mean, really for both teams, but especially Michigan's ability to hit the outside shot. I didn't realize this till after we recorded yesterday, Anthony. Michigan missed their last 9 3-point attempts and still found a way, mainly thanks to Hunter Dickinson being the bruiser of bruisers, to kind of, and Chauncey Brown playing the game of his life, put that thing on ice. And it shows the versatility of this team, that they can have a half where everything's going in and still be up, and then you could have another half where you got to grind and you still find a way to put the game on ice. Just amazing.
Yeah, I mean, well, Michigan was, what, 8 of 11 in the first half from three and only up 2
10 of 13,
time?
I think.
It was 10 of 13? Oh, my God. I mean,
I believe so, yeah.
Just and only up 2 at halftime. I felt bad about that during halftime. I said, oh, man, because I knew water was going to find its level a little bit. But like you said, man, the offensive rebounding, because they struggled a little bit on the defensive glass there in that first half. Ohio State kept a couple possessions alive. They had some good second chance opportunities. And then mm-hmm. Michigan kind of turned it on in the second half. You know, that was obviously the story of the game. I went and watched this one today, like a condensed version. You know, it was pretty much the whole game. A few plays here and there missed out, but really condensed. You don't have all the stoppages in place. The amount of tough shots that were hit in this game just blew my mind all over again. Like, I knew it was happening. Like Liddell, who comes out in that first possession, and Hunter Dickinson is all over him and sinks it from 18, just no problem. And I was like, all right, we're in for a dogfight. And then Washington just didn't want to miss. That's another thing. Why can it just never be easy against, like, in a game like this? You know, like Michigan was up 9 with 30 seconds to go, and we had to sweat the final two free throws with 3 seconds left. It's never
sure
easy.
They made sure they snuck
they
in
kept your throwing in threes.
I was so stressed. I legitimately did not sit for like 30 to 35 straight minutes. I was just pacing like crazy.
Come on, man. It was no place for a nervous person.
Right. It
Thank
was
God. I was by myself. I'll tell you that. Oh my goodness, man. But the question,
it was a remarkably.
Go ahead.
Real quick. I was saying it was a remarkably stressful experience. And there's one sequence I talked about it a little bit on the pod that we did, Anthony, but I wanted to bring it up again. I think Ohio State was really, I mean, you say all teams want this, but I think Ohio State really wanted to get out to a quick start here and punch Michigan in the mouth. And it was 4-0 Buckeyes, and they had an open three from the wing with a chance to make it 7-0, and they missed. And it seemed for the first 3 or 4 possessions that Michigan was really getting, you know, hawked defensively. Those two threes that Eli Brooks hit at the beginning of that game, I think really set the tone for the entire game. Like, I can't imagine this game would have gone well for Michigan if this thing would have started 9-2 or 7-0. Honestly, I think that even though there's no crowd, when that happens on the road, it's often bad news. To be able to settle in as quickly as they did with your one of your senior leaders hitting those two big shots, I think it allowed them to get settled in and was ultimately a huge reason why they ended up winning that game.
I think also I agree 100%, Chris. And it was also the passes, not on the second one. The first one I don't think was from Hunter, but he got double teamed and found Brooks in the corner for that second one. And I think there was one more time Hunter passed out of a double team for an open three. And if you go back and look, they didn't really, the post entries, they didn't double like that anymore. You know, it was pretty much one on one. They had the bullshit offensive foul. Excuse my French there. on the one. I mean, it was one of the worst calls I've ever seen. You know, and that's when I had some very bad things to say about the bald ref. But you had there was nothing even something like that. You know, it was just one on one with the villain dude from Ohio State. And you just never saw it. I mean, he got double teamed sometimes when he got an offensive rebound, but on a straight post entry, they had help waiting, but it was never a hard double because they were so afraid of his ability to pass out of the double team. That's one of his biggest strengths because that allows him to work one-on-one on the block. It's truly amazing, his ability to pass out of a double team. It's incredible.
That really is a tremendous point that you made. And I think it's one of the reasons why Dickinson in the second half had so much success and really kind of grinded and wore down Ohio State's interior defense, not just what Brooks was able to do, but what Shondy was able to do. I mean, those mm-hmm. three pointers from the wings, that changes the entire defensive outlook. And it speaks to how deep this team is, that you can double. And they've talked about it before. Dickinson's talked about it. He said, go ahead and double team me. Watch what happens. Wagner's going to be open in the corner. Chandy's going to be open on the wing. Livers is going to be open up top. You know, like it's pick your poison with this team. And we've seen on one occasion it worked. But against Minnesota, but the game plan of shut down Dickinson, shut down Michigan is a false narrative. It worked one time in a game where Michigan shots weren't falling and they didn't have Eli Brooks. Other than that, there's so many guys on this team that can beat you. I mean, how do you prepare for a Shondy Brown? Really, the guy comes off the bench. He's not in the starting rotation. You're going to spend your entire week game planning for Wagner, game planning for Dickinson, game planning for Livers. And then you have a guy off the bench who's a defensive mastermind who's shooting threes at a rate that would make Duncan Robinson blush at this point. Like that, it speaks to just how ridiculously deep that team is. Anthony, you brought it up yesterday. Shondy Brown would start for probably every other team in the Big Ten right now, and therefore probably every other team in the country. And this dude's coming off the bench and giving them some money minutes. It's pick your poison with this team every single game.
Shondy Brown guards me in my nightmares.
Dude, tell me about it.
Dang.
He's the man.
I need to talk to someone about that.
Seriously. And the worst part is in my nightmares, I can't dribble or shoot. I don't know. You guys ever get dreams like that?
I can't do that in real life. So
every time I go to dribble, I lose the ball and it's and Shondy Brown's there. I promise.
he pulls your pants down and you're just exposed to the whole gym full of people. Right. Is that how that goes?
Yeah, right. Exactly. And it's wow, this guy sucks.
Yeah. So I don't have dreams like that. Just I'm not projecting or anything. Oh man. How do we get this back on the rails?
I guess the big thing is here, this is not this is a great win, but how do you regain your focus if you're Michigan? You know, they have the senior leadership to do it, but man, you still got Illinois and Iowa to play. And this is, the high that must have been feeling after this game must have been truly remarkable.
Well, I think it's weird because I think it's where they actually benefit from having a difficult schedule. Because if they went from Ohio State to, no disrespect, but this team sucks, to Nebraska to three games later having to play Iowa, I think there would be kind of that roller coaster of emotions, potential letdown. But I think they're going to stay laser focused because they know their next opponent is really good. And I know I've taken many shots at Iowa. They're really good. The reason I take shots at them is that I think they probably should be better and their ceiling could be a lot higher, but that's a top 15 basketball team in the country and Michigan's got to play them. I think that having a difficult schedule has allowed this team to remain pretty focused the whole way through and knowing that there aren't many, there's nothing but obstacles here. There are no gimmies. And it's, I think, also benefited from the fact that they're not going from a Sunday afternoon game to a Tuesday night. I think they probably have had that 24-hour period to celebrate, enjoy this one. Now it's back to work. And that's important because it picks up here. You know, the easiest game, Michigan State jokes aside, the easiest game that they probably have left is at Indiana. Everybody else besides that, I mean, those are going to be either very good to mild to scrappy opponents. I mean, if you watched Illinois on Saturday, that looks like a team that thinks that they can, that believes they belong in that upper echelon with Baylor and with Gonzaga and with Michigan. So I think it's, and we said this from the beginning, like way back in October when we talked about Michigan basketball, the schedule, obviously before the shutdown, but the schedule lines up well for them because all of their easier quote unquote opponents, the Penn States, the Nebraskas, the Marylands of the world, were at the beginning of their schedule. And the more difficult opponents came at the very end. And that, I think, is advantageous to a team like this because you get some wins under your belt. You get the confidence under your belt. You're now number three in the country, and now you got to face off against some Goliaths. But at the same time, Michigan's beaten everybody, so maybe they are the Goliath, but they got to keep proving it.
Oh, they're the Goliath. There's no question about that. I don't – everyone's going to get in their best shot.
That was the other point I was trying to make, and it's similar to 2013. And we saw that team, as much as I love them, they're my favorite sports team of all time, had those roadblocks where once they got to number one, everyone was taking a big swing at them. And they stumbled. They stumbled against Penn State and Michigan State and Indiana twice. You know, they made Wisconsin twice. I mean, they had some serious missteps. It's going to be the case for this team now and has been for a while. The biggest difference is that this team has more experience than that one did. You know, as great as the 2013 team was, that team had to grow up really fast because you were starting three freshmen, a sophomore, and a junior. Now those more experienced guys were National Player of the Year, NBA veteran Tim Hardaway. Like, you're playing a lot of talented guys, but guys who had not experienced a deep NCAA tournament run before, there are still guys on this team who have played in a Final Four. Isaiah Livers started a Final Four game several years ago. I think that is so huge for a team like this because you can't say that about any other team in the Big Ten. Illinois, I don't think Ayo Dosunmu has made the NCAA tournament. We know what Iowa does every time they get to March. Michigan State's probably the most experienced, but they're ranked 11th in the Big Ten right now. This is weirdly, despite how the youth of Hunter Dickinson and some of the guys coming off the bench and Mike Smith playing at Columbia last year, probably one of the more experienced, hardened groups in the conference, which is strange to say because I think coming into the season, we were worried about potential inexperience.
No, I think there's merit to all of that. And when you look at they're the team with a target on their back. They are the Goliath right now, so to speak. And I think they've handled that pretty well. They've done a pretty good job of compartmentalizing how they go about their business. They don't, you hear all the cliches. Oh, we're competitors. We don't look ahead. They truly embody that. And, the lone remaining test, and it's the test that we didn't even get to see Juwan Howard even take in his first year, was the postseason. Right. And I think that while this schedule, yeah, you've got some heavyweights coming up. You'll play Iowa on Thursday, but then it's going to be a quick turnaround. You have to go right back out and play on the road Saturday at Indiana. And that could be, if you're looking for one of those little quote unquote trap games the rest of the way, having that Indiana game sandwiched between Iowa and Illinois, that might be a game like Minnesota where just nothing goes right and things like that. This is really the first time this year where, we've seen how they've dealt with the holiday layoff. We've seen how they've responded to the 3-week layoff. They've won three games in a row since then. Now we're going to see how they do. You got a big game. Everyone's going to be watching, just like everyone will be watching this team in March. Got this big game Thursday, and then you got to come right back out. And obviously, if you lose, you're not going to get eliminated like you would in the tournament, but you got to come right back out and play Saturday on the road. And then the next week, you get Illinois, and then 2 days later, you're playing Michigan State. So it's just one of those things where when you're looking for these benchmarks, the next challenges ahead of them, that's kind of where they're at. I mean, I've this team's been in the top 10 since the calendar flipped to 2021. They've spent the better part of the last month and a half as a top five team, and now it's, I'm talking KenPom here, by the way, I don't have the AP poll in front of me, but it's, I don't know what else to say other than I'm as fun as looking back on these games have been, to me it's just the next challenge, the next test. I mean, you're going through a four-game stretch here where obviously you just took care of Ohio State, but then you get, you know, it's murderer's row right after that. And championship caliber teams and great teams and elite teams win more of those games than they don't. And we haven't seen Michigan lose a competitive game yet. So I am interested in seeing, I am interested in seeing what that might look like too. I'm not looking for them to lose, but can they play their best basketball and be beaten? And right now, I don't think that's the case.
You know, it's funny. We have a question here from BCoop03 in the Twitch. He said, would this team beat the 2013 team or 2018 team in a 7-game series? And I think about it, and I don't know if I, you know, want to answer it, because I think probably there's a good chance that they could beat both of those teams in a 7-game series. But I think they're actually a really good, like, combo of the 2013 and 2018 teams. Like 2013, I think they were the number one offense in the country, KenPom, and they ranked somewhere like 70th defense or something like that that year. But they were like number one in points per possession. They were scoring like at 1.25 points per possession or something that year. It was absolutely dumb. But they didn't really play a whole lot of defense. They outscored a lot of teams. 2018 was kind of the opposite, man. Remember how frustrating it used to get?
I've got the numbers here if you want me to cross-reference that. Okay, 2013, they were the top offense in the country. They were 37th on defense. So
a little better than I thought.
And then 2018, they were 35th on offense and third in defense. So, like, almost completely
Inverse. And so here we are with the top 10 offense, you know, number 7 offense, number 12 defense. I think that might even be a little inflated because, again, Ohio State hit so many damn tough shots in that game. Like, Michigan still played really good defense that a lot of teams aren't going to hit the shots that Ohio State hit. So this is like this is the perfect balance between the 2013 and 2018 teams, I feel like.
I'm with you.
Real quick for reference to the 2014 team that went to the Elite Eight. Was 3rd in offense and 89th on defense. So we quite literally have never seen a Michigan team, you know, that's been this good on both sides of the ball like this one currently is.
And that team probably would have been in the hundreds if not for the fact that Jordan Morgan was one of the best defensive players in the conference that year. Like, I think one of the more underappreciated players of the Beeline era. He was a versatile defender, very underrated, you know, could struggled a bit, got benched his junior year, but was a key reason why that team won the Big Ten outright and made it as far as they did. You know, I want to say one more thing, because, you know, we're looking ahead. Everyone's looking ahead, you know, because it is a legitimate possibility that, and no one's crazy, and I don't care. People dig up old takes, exposed, whatever. I'm sorry. On February 22nd, it is not crazy to say that this team could be playing on a Monday in April for the national championship. It's not. But I want to say something real quick about this team and just kind of where we're at in this moment. Because, Anthony, you brought it up a little bit yesterday about how, you know, trying to enjoy the little things. Now, I want this team to win a national championship. I know you guys want this team to win a national championship. Do you know what a dream it would be to come on here and record with you guys following a national championship win? It'd be amazing. And I want that for the team, and I want that for the fan base, but I can't, this today especially, and I didn't get a lot of sleep last night, so I was a little bit loopy, but like, there's something to be said about the chase. Like, I woke up on Sunday nervous about the Ohio State game. And that's like a blessing to me that I can be nervous about something that I have no stake in. And that's the chase. And like, people ask me all the time, like, oh my God, Chris, like, what would you do if the Tigers won the World Series? It'd be amazing. I'd be so happy. I could die with a smile on my face. That's what I want. But like, I miss the chase. I miss being 2 games back of the Tribe with a 3-game set in August and Verlander's pitching game 1. You know, there's something to be said about this moment, because 90% of the teams that we root for have no interest in the chase anymore. We spent all fall covering a football team that, and this is true, would have been better off having their season be canceled because of a pandemic than actually playing and going 2-4. So there is, I wanted to bring this up because there really is something worth noting about how, like, every game feels important. Every game feels meaningful. And I've missed that. I've missed talking about that. I've missed covering that. And I don't know how it's going to end. Maybe they'll win the whole thing. Maybe they'll lose in the first round, but this run that they're on is irreplaceable to me. Like, it is so much fun night in and night out seeing what this team is going to do. I think it's a blast.
Yeah, it is, man. It's what they say, right? The chase is better than the catch. Something like that. We're just saying about that, right?
It's on a cat poster somewhere, I'm sure.
Yeah, right. All right, so we will talk about the Garza-Dickinson matchup, Fat Man, for you. That'll probably be next week. We will definitely will break that down. Eligibility-wise, yes, everyone is eligible to return if they so choose. But, yeah, we do got to shift gears here a little bit quick because we had some interesting news dropped last week. What was it, the end of last week? All these days are kind of running together here.
I think it was Saturday.
Was it Saturday? Okay. So former Michigan linebacker Ben Van Zummeren, he announced that after entering the transfer portal, he's just going to go about a mile up the road to East Lansing, play for Michigan State. And that definitely, as you might expect, got a few reactions, but not only from the Michigan fan base. How about the Michigan players, man? Mike Barrett sending out the tweet of the year on that one.
What did he say?
Bro, what was it? Nah, bro, he said, poo, nah, anyways.
Bro, poo anyway or something?
That's see, I don't want to analyze this too deeply because I don't know if there's really much there. But when you hear talk about potential problems with culture and guys that just don't mesh well, there's a little bit of merit that carries a little bit of weight to me when I see guys tweeting about someone leaving like that. I can't recall. I mean, first of all, you don't see, and first of all, let me say this, where Ben Van Zummeren chooses to play football is totally up to him. And if they're offering him a scholarship and he's comfortable going there, that's a non-issue to me. And we've seen guys switch schools like that before. Remember the Borens with Ohio State and Michigan, and
yep.
Ed Warner's kid transferred from Michigan State to Michigan. But again, you know, different, call it what it is, different caliber of player. But, you know, it lends some credence to the idea that maybe there was a little more friction in that locker room on the defensive side of the ball than we knew already. But that is, like I said, I've never seen, and it wasn't like an outward team reaction. I think most guys were quiet about it, but to see, it wasn't just Mike Barrett. I think someone else had something to say about it too, but yeah. The transfer does nothing for me because, to be frank with you, and I say this looking over my shoulder, hoping that a Division I linebacker isn't waiting to like assault me, but honestly, it's not, it's not a big loss for them.
So, no, it's just the fact of where he transferred to at the end of the day. And it's not a grad transfer. It's a guy who did play, a little bit or whatever, but it's not like Andrew Dockich going to Ohio State. And like, he even caught hell for that, you know, like, so no, it's it just, that was the,
yeah.
What's
no,
what's
that, Chris? That was where Anthony and I met, was at, for the first time, was that Andrew Dockich game when he got booed out of Chrysler Center.
Yeah.
In 2018.
You just don't do it, man. You know?
Right. And that's the thing. That's what people are going back and forth, like recruiting and transfer Twitter to me. And this is really saying something, is the worst Twitter, in my opinion, like by a substantial margin. And I saw over the weekend, two people that I really like and have interacted with, so I'm not going to call out, you know, going back and forth about the whole thing. And they were never going to agree on it, but look, it's fair to wish the guy the best, to say that it is 1,000,000%, especially if he's not getting paid, his right to go wherever the hell he wants. But it's completely fair to note that it is odd. It's strange. It is weird. I would find it odd if I went to, like, I went to Central. Let's say I would have continued my tennis career beyond high school and played at Central for 2 years. And I was like, you know what? I want to start playing at Western. I think that would be a weird conscious decision to be like, all right, I'm changing fight songs. I'm changing the colors. Whole family's got to ditch all their Central gear and change. Like it would be odd. So it is an odd transfer. I think it speaks to the state of both programs. One, yeah, I mean, with every one of these, you know, again, it's death by a million paper cuts. It adds to the idea, and I think it holds a lot of weight, that there is some issues within the Michigan program. Now, of course, he probably wasn't going to get playing time, but there has to be some sort of personal beef when you jump from Michigan to Michigan State. I'm sorry, there has to be. There's got to be some sort of chip on your shoulder. And I think it speaks to the fact that Mel Tucker – in fairness to him, is gonna work his ass off to try to acquire every little bit of talent that he can acquire. I think they had a serviceable recruiting class in year one for him. And I think he's doing that again. I think that he's going to have a pretty a unique environment there that certain people are going to want to play for. And I think Van Summeren is a prime example of that. It's one of those things that it's an interesting story. It's a fun story, much like Justin Boren was early in the Rich Rod days when he went to Ohio State. But it has to be said, and you brought it up, Anthony, the guy, he wasn't going to play. It's not like, you know, it's not like Rashawn Gary after year one deciding to go to Ohio State. I mean, this was a guy who'd gotten beat out, who was a backup essentially on a defense that was Swiss cheese all of last season. You know, that was getting torched by every court, that made Rocky Lombardi look like Patrick bleeping Mahomes. So it is what it is. It's a fascinating story to discuss. And if you want to say it's another unfortunate notch on the belt for the Harbaugh era, you can, but like if they were winning 10, 11 games or 11, 12 games a year, no one would even blink at this. But the fact is they've underachieved. And so people are going to make it into something more than it probably is.
Yeah. I just like that the players, it doesn't sound like he's,
well, let me see this. It shouldn't have gone unsaid or unaddressed that if you're a guy that's in that locker room, I totally get being pissed off and being,
of course.
Yeah, you have every right to do that. Just, I mean, again, I think there's something's weird there. Like, you just got to be wired differently to be bought in, or maybe he wasn't entirely bought in.
I don't think you can be entirely bought in and then make that decision, you know?
Yeah. No, it's, again, try not to psychoanalyze it too much, but
yeah.
There is also, real quick, Anthony, there is also the other theory that perhaps maybe he loved Don Brown. I mean, you know, Don Brown needed to go. That was a disappointing end to what had been a fairly solid tenure. But when he left, almost unanimously, everyone who was a part of the program, both currently and in the past, said, we love the guy. We loved playing for him. Now, it didn't work out from an X's and O's, from a results standpoint, but he might have been a guy who came to Michigan because of that and decided, you know what, my guy's not here anymore. I'm going to play wherever I want. Now, of course, you had the curveball there of, he went to one of your biggest rivals, but that, I think that could have been absolutely a determining factor behind this whole thing.
Sure.
Yeah.
Don Brown, I mean, well, outside of the defensive tackles, but yeah, I think that Don Brown in many ways, at least early in his tenure, maybe not the last couple of years, had a solid impact on recruiting here. Now it fell off the last couple of seasons and thus the reason why his defenses were so poor his last few years when he was at Michigan. But yeah, I think that was probably part of the reason as well.
We also had a little bit of news that, I mean, it surprised, I know, at least me and Chris, I think it surprised Anthony. I'm not really 100% sure, but Jim Harbaugh not going to be coaching the quarterbacks apparently here this year. Baltimore, who just keep raiding, you know, his brother's staff, does old Jimmy Harbaugh. Matt Weiss, I don't know what the correct pronunciation is here for him. He was a running backs coach at Baltimore. He's going to come be the quarterbacks coach at Michigan. And lost Brian Jean Mary, so the staff just still trying to find its footing here a little bit.
Yeah, I can't. You say you weren't sure how I feel. I can't say that I'm like shocked that the BGM decided to BJM. Sorry, I always forget how to pronounce his name, so I just abbreviate it. But this is a guy who, if Christian Robinson decided he was coming here from Florida to coach the linebackers, there probably wouldn't have been a spot for him on the staff. And as a result, you saw him, he had a little bit of a flirtation with Urban Meyer in Jacksonville, did interview there a couple weeks ago, but it seemed like he was locked in. And now what this does is, again, it goes back to what we've talked about. For this thing to get turned around, there has to be a massive all-in effort from all the parties that are involved here, players, coaches, water boys, support staff, you name it. And again, it is interesting that not saying that he doesn't have any other options, but we've talked about the impact of what that contract extension could be in terms of perceived stability and whatnot. And it's interesting to me that they keep going to this Baltimore Ravens. Well, there's clearly something he's trying, you know, there's something there that, that Jim is trying to replicate at Michigan. And like I said, a part of me commends him for that. Maybe it, maybe he ends up being a psychic and he's a visionary and this is what Michigan needs. But on the other hand, if these guys were so, let me choose my words carefully here because we will interact with them at some point. If, why does John Harbaugh let these young up and comers go to coach for his brother? You know what I mean? I mean,
yeah, especially I understand. I understand the linebackers coach to D coordinator because that's an upgrade. But running backs coach to quarterbacks coach is just a bit of a lateral move.
Yeah, my I think there's probably a. If I had to guess, there's probably like a game planning and analytics based thing that he's looking to bring over. I think people I've talked to think they do want to be a little more like Baltimore offensively. Whether that, you know, you don't have Lamar Jackson, so that doesn't help. But, you know, like I said, George Hilo going to coach the line or coach the linebackers. Ron Bellamy was going to coach the wide receivers. He's moving to safeties now. So, I mean, it all balances out. It's just, it's weird that it's almost March and they're dealing with this, but apparently, it is what it is. I don't, Jim Harbaugh coaching the quarterbacks one way or another to me, doesn't make much of a difference. And this doesn't, you know, this could be a Ben McDaniels thing or it could be Jed Fish. Who the hell knows? I didn't even know who this guy was until yesterday. So for me to sit here and act like I know what's coming or what the thought process behind it is, I don't know. I mean, there is, I'll say this, there's a certain amount of what's going on right now that does feel like throwing a lot of stuff at the wall and seeing what sticks, and we'll see what sticks. But I just
been a lot of that over the last 6 years, hasn't there?
Yeah, there has. So that's kind of where we're at right now.
Yeah, I don't think it's unfair to say that there is a bit of desperation mode at this point. I think in general the. Jim Harbaugh is not a dumb man. He's aware of what the expectations are, and he's aware of the fact that they've fallen short of those expectations. I don't have a ton to say about this simply because, and again, maybe I'm just being a simpleton here. I'm the only non-college graduate of this podcast, but man, I'm starting to get kind of confused by who's coaching what. I mean, is Ron Bellamy now with the safeties? Is that, or the DBs? Yep. Mm-hmm. Okay, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me.
When did that drop? Because I thought he was wide receivers. I must have missed that news.
He was. No, they said he was gonna be. I think they just moved him like a couple days ago.
Okay,
but it would have been in the aftermath of all this because what you can't have is four defensive assistants, three of them being new guys, and then have six guys on offense because then you're dealing with a. Too many cooks in the kitchen type deal. So,
yeah.
And I mean, I'd even argue you're kind of already doing that. Just this, and I don't want to go there, but like I'm starting to get mild last 2 years of the D'Antonio administration kind of vibes off of this where it's like, okay, you coach this and then you coach this and then we're going to rearrange and you're going to coach this. It's just kind of like that desperation.
You kept all the same guys though.
That's true. That is true. But like, I mean, Ron Bellamy has been here for 2 weeks and he's already had two different coaching positions. So I find that a little bit odd. The other part that I find strange is I thought it was set in stone that Harbaugh was going to coach the quarterbacks again. Maybe there was misinformation. Anthony, you love to reference those sites, with the paywalls. So maybe I missed something.
This was the plan. Like this isn't I think all of this was kind of precipitated by, Jean-Marie deciding to go elsewhere. When that became apparent, then you have another staff spot to fill. And for Michigan, it's probably easier at this point to kind of backfill and just go hire the best, you know, this is where I think they're coming from. Mike McDonald can coach, you know, the linebackers or he'll have an impact there. We'll move Hilo to linebackers. We'll move Bellamy over to safeties. Ron Bellamy's been a head coach. I know it was high school, but he doesn't just know wide receivers. So like
that's, I know.
And Mo Linguist will have a big part in all that too, but it just seems like to me, this screams, I don't like, let's not, and I don't want this to come off as a lazy thing. I think it was just an effort to just, let's just bring in a guy who I think is the best assistant that can fill one of these 10 slots. And again, we're just starting up, you know, we're just getting started with spring football. We can make this pivot now because there's really, I mean, what else is really in place at the moment? I mean, you're already putting in a new defense. You're, you know, it's like a fresh start for everyone. So it is weird, but it's not like this was necessitated by one of your staff members leaving. This wasn't Jim Harbaugh waking up one day, you know, slamming a glass of whole ass milk and just being like, you know what? I don't want to coach QBs anymore. So I think that's just all kind of what it,
man,
I would assume this might be a big assumption here for me, but I would assume that Jim Harbaugh, oh God, I'm going to get skewered for this. I would assume that Jim Harbaugh is not going to hire someone that isn't qualified for the role he has in mind for them. And now I'll duck the tomatoes.
Yeah. Hasn't stopped him before. But no, I do get your point. I do get your point. I guess the one other thing I am surprised is that I would have guessed on late November when the season ended in December that Josh Gattis wouldn't be back. There has not, we have not heard from him much. Did he delete his Twitter? Yeah, well, he had that whole thing where he congratulated Ohio State and then he privated his Twitter. I forgot about that. But like, he hasn't been very active. He hasn't said much. I guess I'm through all the rearranging. I'm a little bit surprised that the one guy that they've been hellbent on keeping has been Gattis, and we'll see where it goes. Like I would have been fine really with a complete overhaul. And they did do that except for the OC. So that's a little bit surprising.
Also, you know what else you could
do? You know what else is a problem when you have to overhaul your whole staff? Maybe the guy who's in place at the top, like,
I know we've had that conversation many times.
I know. I'm just saying. We are where we are. I think this has been a good episode. And before we go down that path of me yelling about football, we might just want to call it. Unless you have anything.
We didn't even get to the fact that Joe Milton's in the transfer portal.
Oh well, you know,
Godspeed.
This Michigan-Ohio State game yesterday really just like I kind of forgot everything else that was happening.
Yeah, like, I know. I forgot the football team was awful for a second. Yeah.
Yeah, it just superseded everything. So like, all the news prior to it, just completely whatever, you know?
Basketball school. That's what it is.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
it's feeling like it. I do actually want to say one quick thing about Milton because there are certain Michigan quarterbacks that you felt like something got lost in the translation. I think the perfect example to me is Devin Gardner, where it's like, I think Devin Gardner somewhere in him was an excellent college quarterback. I think the constant changing of systems was, you know, such a detriment to him. And we know what Nussmeier did here. Milton's going to be an interesting one because yes, he's an incredible specimen. Yes, a big arm, but I mean, you talk about a guy who was given a golden opportunity here for, you know, this entire season. He was handed the keys to the car, and the ability is there. The arm is there. The build is there. But Steven did such a great job, and he didn't mean to do this. He wasn't signaling the guy out, but Steven did such a great job on Mason Brew on the YouTube page of breaking down every snap. And you really got the impression that this is a quarterback who's just not that great at reading defenses. Like if he wants to throw a 50-yard post route to Cornelius Johnson in the end zone against Indiana, he can do that because he's got a great build and a big arm. But I'm sure he might go somewhere smaller and be successful. But yeah, I think I'm not weeping about the loss of Joe Milton. The only reason it's frustrating is because this is quarterback number 7 of the Harbaugh era and none of them have been elite.
It's just amazing how much time we spent on the Milton versus McCaffrey thing, and now they're just both gone.
Yeah, and McCaffrey never taken a snap here, and is now where? I mean, no, I know he's where his dad is coaching, and what? Where is it? Northern
Colorado?
Iowa. Yeah. What's that? Northern Colorado. Yeah, that's. Yeah, I was I was always under the belief that D-Mac was the best quarterback on the roster. Like I, a lot of people tried to push the Milton stuff, and one day John U. Bacon will have to write another book reluctantly, because I don't think he wants to write another one.
He doesn't want to, but he has to.
Right, but he also wants to buy another house, so he's probably going to end up writing another one. But I love John U. He's the best. But I about what happened there, because in a typical season, those stories would have leaked out more about the quarterback competition. But in a COVID year where everyone was, as Harbaugh, you know, the phrase he coined, in the submarine, we don't really know what went on. It's like there was a huge brawl. Everybody came out bruised, and yet we don't know who threw the first punch. It's kind of a weird thing.
Yeah.
What happened? We'll never really know. And we will at some point what happened with the quarterback situation last season. Was it D-Mac got frustrated? Was it that he threatened to opt out? I've heard a million different rumors, but it was clear outside of the Minnesota game, which of course turned out to be the fluke of all flukes, it was clear that the guy who was starting at quarterback for Michigan last year was not a confident quarterback. And outside of 2.5 quarters of Cade McNamara, nobody who took snaps for U of M last year really was.
I love this from Kyle Waldney here in the Twitch chat. Think he ends up at UCF, USF, or FAU, but give me Joe Milton and Gus Malzahn down at UCF, man.
He's saucy.
He could work for him.
I would love it. I would love to see it. I mean, you know, UCF, that's the perfect place, I think, for a guy like Joe Milton here. But, hey, maybe, who knows? Michigan, they're not. It's not a foreign concept to start a true freshman at quarterback, so we'll be talking a lot of J.J. McCarthy versus Cade McNamara, I think, coming up here. I don't think Dan Villari, you think he's going to get in the mix here?
I'm sure that his name will be brought up in a press conference with like the walk-ons too. I mean, those guys are playing well because Jim Harbaugh has a way of like, if you ask him about a position group or a player, he'll rave about the entire position group. And I'm not disrespecting those other guys. It's just kind of how these things go.
Right.
I will say this, quick thoughts on quarterback battle. When you look at Cade McNamara's high school film and you look at J.J. McCarthy's high school film, throw ratings aside, those two guys to me look like the most college ready quarterbacks that Michigan has recruited. Now, it doesn't mean anything, but you know, the fact of the matter is Jim Harbaugh has like none of these quarterbacks that have been signed by Harbaugh have finished their careers as playing quarterback at Michigan. Zach Gentry moved to tight end. Brandon Peters transferred. McCaffrey's transferring. Milton's transferring. And that leaves you in those first two or three years of the quarterback stuff, I was pretty easy on them because it does take time. And Jim Harbaugh wasn't recruiting like the JT Daniels, Justin Fields of the world who come in and they're ready right out of the box, which we could do a whole show on that, honestly. But 7 years in, which is where we're at now, and you haven't recruited we still don't know if you've recruited the long-term, and by long-term, I mean a multiple-year starter, answer quarterback. People are going to write if/when this flames out with Harbaugh. If it happens, again, don't want to be negative. But there will be so many think pieces that are written and so many, what the heck happened? This was a home run hire, blah, 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 blah. It's not difficult to diagnose why it hasn't gone better here. Quarterback's been a big problem. So I don't, to bring this full circle, I don't want to say that I'm not relieved. I won't say I'm relieved that Jim Harbaugh's not coaching the quarterbacks, but I'm also not opposed to it being someone else. So whoever that
That's fair. That's fair. I wasn't either. The only reason I brought it up is just it seemed like it was set in stone. And then they kind of pulled the rug out at the last second. Yeah. I mean, I don't care. I really like any random schmo could be doing it. If they're successful, it doesn't really, no team has ever been like, man, this staff is great, but I'm really worried about the quarterbacks coach. It's just, it was a weird juxtaposition because at the last second, it seemed like there was that kind of random sudden twist.
All right, let's wrap this up. Chris, where can we find you on social media, my man?
At Castellani 2014, you know, we're getting closer to baseball season. Something's coming, and I know I've been teasing that for a long time. I've been working on a lot of things, but I promise you, There will be in some capacity, even if it's a limited capacity, a return to that wonderful, magical place in the sky known as Twitter. But I have another show as well, Locked On Tigers. That's at Locked On Tigers on Twitter. Talking Tigers baseball three times a week right now. Starting in March, it will be going to back to 5 days a week, and that will last all the way through the season, probably into late November, early December. Talking Tigers baseball and just talking baseball in general, because talking for, you know, several hours a week about a baseball team that's going to lose 100 games would make me want to pull my hair out. So I do cover occasional other teams as well. I have a YouTube channel where I've been reviewing a lot of movies lately. I'll probably be doing a top 10 and 10 worst movies of 2020 list here pretty soon. I think I've caught up on pretty much everything I need to see. So please follow me on all those platforms. It'd be much appreciated. And lastly, before anybody forgets, two more things. Rate us, review us on iTunes for Maize and Brew. We really appreciate the positive feedback. And two, I've gotten some tweets about this. Even though I'm off Twitter, I don't run the Maize and Brew Twitter account. Like, I don't know. I think that was a rumor that was started somehow recently that I was sending to that I in my
I don't know who does it either.
In my nefariousness, I've decided to leave Twitter and as a back channel, decide to use Maize and Brew as my go-to. I don't run that account, but I love the people who do, and I support everything we post. All right. Thank you for following me on all those platforms.
Anthony, where can we find you?
Damn. Well, I run the Maize and Brew account, so you could follow that at Maize and Brew on Twitter. Other staff members do too, but it's primarily me. Twitter's the bad place. It's not the good place. It is the bad place. So Chris, shout out to you for making good, healthy decisions. But you can listen to us on Apple, Google, Spotify, Stitcher. Like Chris said, leave us a nice review. We love your feedback. We love you guys on Twitch who bring your questions and talk throughout the show. Try to get more of them in, but you know, we have a tendency to ramble a bit, and by we I mean me. So we're working on it. But yeah, thanks for your support. Thanks for your time, and we appreciate you.
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at Luke Giardi, LukeGhiardi. If you want to watch someone in real time lose their mind over college basketball games, that is the right place to go, because I don't do well sometimes. So you can follow me there. Follow the Brewcast Show page at Brewcast Show. And as Chris and Anthony said, rate us, leave a review, man, subscribe. You don't want to miss out. And every Monday night, well, usually Monday nights, we'll let you know if we have to push it a day. But we're live on Twitch, 7:30 p.m. Come hang out, join the chat. Big thanks to Kyle Walney, BCoop03, Fatman for you, and Stealth Nader. Appreciate you guys hopping in the chat here tonight. Always make it a whole lot of fun. So appreciate you guys. And for my partners, Chris Castellani and Anthony Broom, I'm Luke Giardi. We'll see you next week on Brewcast.